Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode of the Four Center podcast feed is the Bad Batch Report. Yay! Sad and or heroic drums. I was so excited as we head into the finale to see what kind of noises Ken Knapsack would make, and I was not disappointed. I got a little bit of space guitar and drums. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw, and we are happy to be here. Ken, what made you pick that noise?
I'm trying to make it a little sad, a little, tug on the heartstrings, but also important, big, epic, because that's this episode.
Yeah, tug on the heartstrings is a great turn of phrase, but I really felt that this episode was full on yanking. I thought there was some yanking on heartstrings in it. Worked incredibly well for me. We are discussing episode 15 of Finale Part 1, or as the episode itself says, Return to Kamino. It is directed by Nathaniel Villanueva, written by Matt Machenovitz. And Ken, there is only one episode left, Finale Part 2. Perhaps the actual title will be Attempt to Leave Camino. We'll see. But we got one episode left. But before this finale, part one, Return to Camino, was even released to the public, there was an announcement that there is indeed a second season of The Bad Batch. Are you happy that they already made the announcement before going into these finale episodes?
Yeah, absolutely. Why wait? Why hold that, hold that information and get everyone excited, especially as you wrap this up. And now I'm more curious about what will be the final shot of this season that will make us be like, I can't wait to season two.
Are you feeling like there's going to be a little bit of resolution and then a looking into the horizon? Or are you expecting next week full on wait a year or however long until it's actually released, a cliffhanger?
I mean, I'm really bad at this now because I was like, I don't know, maybe Hunter doesn't even get rescued. And as suspected, it would happen pretty fast. I could see now that there's a little resolution and a little hope and the next chapter begins. And we have a piece or a clue of that that makes you excited to wait. But yeah, I think I'm expecting resolution more than I think I thought it was.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a resolution. We'll talk a little bit more about our hopes and expectations for that final episode. But I feel like for the season, I think there's going to be some amount of resolution with Crosshair. And I'm really 50-50 on whether they'll go for the direct big cliffhanger. But I think even if there is a cliffhanger, it will be with some thematic stuff, if not actual practical stuff, resolved with Crosshair.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Thematic, certainly, which is some most intriguing stuff this week. So, yeah.
Yeah. So this has been fascinating for me as all of these streaming shows roll out. And we know streaming shows in a lot of ways, but for this sort of Disney model, dealing really particularly with Star Wars and Marvel, you get it a little bit on Paramount Plus with Star Trek, with this kind of new kind of show where a season is announced and sometimes they'll tell you right away, like, yeah, no, this is kind of a one and done. It's a special thing. Like I think Kenobi is going to be a one and done, but then other things are ambiguous. And it's really fascinating to go through this experience where spoilers for anybody who has not watched Loki, click back in 30 seconds, but Loki revealed at the end of its finale that there was a season two. And then we got the opposite here where they pre-announced that there is going to be a season two for Bad Batch. And I was really happy with it because I enjoyed the Loki finale, but I got really distracted by watching it because there was no sense. There was some thematic resolution, but plot wise, there was just sort of like more doors thrown open. Mm. And so as the seconds ticked down, you had that distraction of like, what the hell's going on? And then when there's a little, post-credit sequence that said Loki season two, then you were like, okay. And it was really nice to be relieved of that.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I can watch these episodes for what they are, knowing that there's more story coming.
Yeah, no, I think that kind of works for me better. Yeah. Then I know sometimes it's not they're not doing super intentional business reasons, whatever. I don't know the Loki case, but like, yeah, to get it out, not out of the way, but just, hey, celebrate it. Get ready. Really take this in, and we're going to move forward with the show. I think that was nice. That was good.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into this episode. What was your overall reaction? Did you love it, like it, struggle with it? How are you feeling?
I only struggled with it originally because I fell asleep for the first time this season during a viewing at midnight in the middle. But then I got back up, and I absolutely loved this episode. Wonderfully ominous. That sense of foreboding is all through it. And just that title alone, Return to Camino, I would just, that can't be good for Camino. And they just kind of delivered on a lot of those things in the big emotional moments and the beats and did something slightly different than what I was personally expecting with Crosshair and Hunter's confrontation that I ended up really loving.
Oh, good. I'm glad that you were surprised. Did you have a long day? Is that what got you at midnight?
Long day. Was hanging out with a friend, having some dinner and some drinks, and got home, and it was like, it was like 11, and it's like, you look at the clock, and I told Grace, I go, I got the show at midnight, so we watched another show, which that usually tires me out. That's my wind down. Let's watch Ghost Adventures. And so I started falling asleep on the couch. I was like, no, Bad Batch. I got to watch Bad Batch. And that I paid the price, I guess.
I understand. I took an 11:30 power nap And then I was up and ready, like a little squirrel man with my eyes just glued to the television set. But it's fun to watch some of these episodes like this that have a dreamlike quality late at night and let them kind of wash over you and then get up right away in the morning and watch them a little bit more clear headed. Cause I feel like I get to experience them in two different ways. Like the first experience is just almost just emotional and intuitive. And then in the morning, it's a little bit more like, you know, clinical and thoughtful, you know?
Yeah, no, and both in fun ways. Clinical could be fun, but yeah, I go to bed kind of going, wow, that was great. In the morning, it's like, what made it great?
Exactly. For me, I did think this one was great. I really loved it. I loved how lean and specific it was, that it was laser focused plot wise on Hunter's predicament and returning to Kamino, as the title says, but also just really dialing into what are the core issues of this show? What are the core issues of Hunter, Omega, Crosshair, and kind of bringing it all back to the beginning of the season in particular with Kamino, and a lot of the questioning that was going on in those early episodes, it comes back here. So I really felt great about that. This episode also just kind of felt like a little bit of a mini version of the overall show. Like the show can change its tone a little bit, but I feel like episode to episode, depending on the adventure, but I feel like the big picture of this show, which makes it kind of unique and interesting, is it's got this big sense of doom and sadness almost always, just because of the era. But then there's this big glimmer of hope in the bond of the squad, of the family, and their relationship and their meaning to one another. And it felt like I always feel that way about the show, but this was just like this little mini version of that whole idea in one episode.
Yeah, it's really at times it's fun to watch, but hard to watch. It just, you know, we know what's happening to the galaxy as it's unfolding episode by episode and page by page. And it really got addressed here in some of the Kamino stuff we'll talk about. Just, yeah, I know what you mean. Like almost every episode has a little tinge of sadness to me of what was and what we know will be. But yeah, the focus on the group and all for one and one for all. And it has been a very successful season for me in that regard.
Yeah,
I'm someone who's like, Bad Batch, sure, great. Now I don't have that feeling. I really love them.
Oh yeah, no, and I think when it first got announced, as I've said before, like I liked the Bad Batch, but I was more intrigued by the era, and I just love the way that they have made the characters this kind of shining beacon of hope and fun and kindness and empathy and family and all these great things amidst this very dark time. And last thing I wanted to say about my overall reaction is I really loved how much it leaned into the darkness in this very mythic, dreamlike way. I love it when Star Wars feels dreamlike. And this really did to me, because it had this very mythic, lots of images of descending into depths and going to a familiar place and encountering a lot of unknown things. And it's like that dream where, like, yeah, I went back to high school, but high school was also my office now. And it was just like, it's home, but it's not right. And it's this very traditional storytelling. It's very mythic storytelling of you can't truly go home again. You leave home, you are changed by your experiences. And then when you come back, home isn't really home again. Like, you have internalized the ideas of home, but the actual place is now different. And this kind of upsetting feeling that what is the most familiar to you, home, now feels foreign. And there's a lot of that that's just practical storytelling about, like, yeah, because the Empire is a giant organized jerk that's destroying their home. And that's the problem. But it still, to me, touched those deep, mythic, dreamlike feelings of what if home isn't home anymore?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely worked that way. Yeah. Well said.
And then we're going to see even more of that, I think, since they're buried in their own home. So let's get into the big ideas of the episode, the big themes. What ideas were at stake for you in this episode, Ken?
The question of when to hold on and then when to let go seemed to pop up a lot, sometimes quite literally with in Crosshair yelling at Hunter to let go of Omega, Omega not wanting to let go of Hunter in the beginning in the rescue. And there's a lot of things about that, going to get Hunter, being told to let Omega go, like I said, turning away from the Empire, turning away from a wandering and for the Republic or whatever that was. And that all that comes to the forefront with this idea of, you know, did they let Crosshair go or did he give them no choice and they had to let go? And we as even humans in our own lives sometimes having to know when it is best to move on. And I think part of the reason it's so powerful, tying to some of the stuff you've already said, this return to Camino really represents, I wrote down the note of returning to where you're from to find out who you are now. And I think that's in line with some of the stuff you're thinking there. And just some great, wonderful lines about this is who I am. And you gave us no choice. It really dealt with some of those big concepts.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm in total agreement. I think I picked out a couple of the ideas that you're talking about and thought of them in some specific ways. The first big one for me, you're talking about the choice of when to let go and when to hold on. And I really thought what was great is they established this idea early in the show, and it's been a tension throughout. It's this big thing to me of no one gets left behind, of that big idea in society or in family if you choose it, but that it's kind of specifically the point of a squad like this, right? So I love how much they dialed down specifically into that Crosshair knows that the squad will come for Hunter. I love when Hunter says, using my comm won't work, they'll know it's a trap, and Crosshair says, like, they'll still come for you. Like, yeah. There's a lot of tension on this about the fact that Crosshair almost knows the Bad Batch better than they're kind of willing to know themselves about this no one gets left behind thing. And then, of course, there's so much going on here that Crosshair is hurt because he feels like they did leave him behind, you know, and that's something that's been hanging over the show of us wondering, is Crosshair going to feel that, you know, is he going to feel the personal wound of that? And we'll get into all of the stuff with his chip and when it came out and all that. But I liked it that emotionally came back. It's this big idea of that's like the core of who we used to be. If we had this purpose as soldiers, and as a part of that, you know, our oath is, you know, we don't leave one another behind. And Crosshair even says, you know, knowing that his trap is going to work, like they don't leave their own behind most of the time.
Yeah.
So great. And Hunter saying, you tried to kill us, we didn't have a choice. And Crosshair said, and I did. And I did. It was a great delivery that opened up that ambiguity, but really made it, you know, put the knife, the metaphorical knife instead of all the real knives in Hunter and starting to twist, right?
Yeah, no, it I love those moments. You said, give enough ambiguity of just like, you know, not that I want to suddenly immediately I'm sympathizing with Crosshair. You know, I don't necessarily think that's the case, but gave me great pause. I asked the question, do we think Crosshair was right on any level? And I'll be honest, I didn't have the chance I wanted this morning to go back and rewatch maybe the first episode or two just to kind of reexamine it for myself.
Yeah.
This new kind of context, especially the chip, that we'll talk about later.
Yeah. So I just think is great to really feel that emotion of there was this great perspective almost where I don't think it's like intended in any cheeky way, but like Crosshair's kind of going along with the fans of like Crosshair seems mad. Like you guys were just messing around with Moochie the Rancor you know, rescuing people on Raxus of all places. And you didn't come from me, you know?
Yeah.
You didn't ever think to turn around for me. It feels like that to me is the subtext, a lot of what's going on in with Crosshair's choices. And then you get that great contrast where Omega is super, super focused on never willing to leave anyone behind, in particular Hunter. You know, it gets echoed again and again of AZ tells her that she has to leave because it's not safe there. And she's like, nope.
Yeah.
No way. We don't leave unless we have Hunter. You know, Echo tells her to call Rex if there's a problem. There's immediately a problem. She's like, yeah, no, not going to do that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
She's so, so focused. And there's even this nice little thread with AZ of that idea that no one leaves behind. If you're not going to leave anyone behind, that means you're willing to put yourself in risk. And AZ says, but if we help them, that means we will also be in danger.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, that's the whole thing.
Absolutely. I love that. No, we have to help him. It means we'll also be in danger. I absolutely that resonated and makes his wonderful choice later valuable. But it's kind of been a lot of this whole season, right? And just kind of spotlighting that lesson. When you make this choice, it's not easy and it shouldn't be.
Yeah, exactly. And we've seen that where they put one another at risk to even that moment with Echo last episode. where he's like, yeah, no, I know we don't have any information and it's incredibly dangerous, but there's someone in there who is not choosing to be there. We got to go. That's what you did for me. Like, that has been a real theme across the show of putting yourself in risk of to make sure that you don't leave anyone behind. And I love the way that it comes together at the end of, you know, Hunter saying, Wrecker, grab Crosshair. He's coming with us. Even after Crosshair has made it really, really clear of like, I want something different. And I made the choice to hunt you. it wasn't the chip I chose. And again, we'll get to the chip timing debate. But even after that, it feels like Hunter has come around to this place of like, well, Crosshair was right. Omega is right. We don't leave one another behind. And I love that he kind of looks to Omega.
Yes, I was just going to say that. It's the greatest moment of the episode for me.
Right? He looks to her for like, you know, he's been the really like, I am raising you. You don't know how the galaxy works, but you know a lot of stuff that we don't, which this episode really reminds you. The way that he looks to her, like she's going to be upset with him. And she gives him the nod like, good job. Good emotional clarity, Hunter.
I love that moment. I highlighted that as well, and I didn't know quite where to put it, but this is a great spot for the conversation. It was pretty powerful, right? He's definitely learning from her, and we kind of knew all that kind of stuff, and he gets it. She's part of the team, but yeah, it was pretty powerful. Pretty powerful.
Was it powerful to you in from Hunter's perspective or Omega's perspective? Like, why do you think it resonated with you emotionally?
It was the question this episode is asking about chance and choice and when to go, when to let go. I think there's a lot of reason to support the Bad Batch decision to leave Crosshair behind. I think there's some questions to ask themselves about did they do that properly or too soon. But I think all coming to this moment of, you know, redemption is big in Star Wars, and Crosshair's not asking for redemption right now, to be clear. But there's a path forward to that Crosshair redemption that I didn't necessarily think was there before, and it has to come from Crosshair or come from Omega for me, not have to, but like her giving the clue of just like, yeah, no, this is right. And I know where you all came from, but we're not staying here. And on any level, spiritually, we're going to move forward. It was a real purposeful nod for me. And for Hunter, set out to protect her and become this de facto parent and everything to look at her and kind of look for that guidance and look for that. I think he's going to make that decision. Right. But it's just like, yeah, this is the right way. And this is what we've all learned on this mission.
Yeah. I think it hit me on a couple levels. One, just like how much a part of the squad she is, like that he wants to make sure that she is okay with it, that he is seeking her validation, which is huge in terms of her being a part of the squad. But also it's just this kind of great trade-off over this whole season where it feels like the Bad Batch has had to impart all sorts of practical wisdom of how to get by in the galaxy to Omega. And Omega has had this better clarity of kind of emotionally how the squad works.
Yeah.
And had to impart that to them. And she's like, you learned your lesson. Good.
Yeah. We've said a few times now that Omega's just kind of right there in the center of the right way to do things, the core, no questions, just a simple, straightforward, yep, we help people. This is what we do. And that was the end of the journey for me in that regard of her just kind of giving the, yep, A-okay, this is what we do.
Yeah. Two final small beats for me in this big idea of no one gets left behind. I like that AZ-3 really joins the gang for now. We'll see. But Omega even says, come on, AZ, you're with us. In like she's extending like the bubble of the squad to AZ as well.
Yeah.
And then obviously there's a lot of tension in this episode between, you know, what the clones had been, what the Republic had been, what the Empire is. And I love that they're all wrestling with, should we have come back for Crosshair? This idea of no one gets left behind. You don't even run to save yourself. And the Empire's like, yeah, none of that. Leave them all behind.
Yeah.
We don't care.
Yeah.
Leave the entire idea of Kamino behind. We've got their data that we don't care about them. It's a stark contrast.
Yeah. And strikingly, hauntingly beautiful too. The ships coming out of the clouds and it was heartbreaking, but yeah, really indicative of the cold, callous nature of this new government.
Exactly. I have another kind of big picture theme I'd love to run through, but I want to make sure that I'm getting all your thoughts as well.
You hit the big ones. I'll probably weave in and out. But I love there were some minor themes, if you will, but they all factor in. The idea of focus comes in to play and how that provides clarity and knowledge, but I think more important, direction. I think Omega, from the beginning of the episode to a little bit later on, where she's the one telling AV, like, calm down, focus. I thought that was just a little powerful, little life lesson, a little stepping stone forward there. And it's some fun stuff with trust, you know, Omega in the landing pad and even Wrecker, like, oh, I never doubted you for a second, kid. I just love that.
Yeah, there is a lot of moments of trust, right? There's a questioning from the elite squad troopers if Crosshair can actually be trusted. The word trust and the idea of trust does pop up a lot. And you really get that sense of, like, we got to trust Omega as we descend into the literal unknown. We descend first into the ocean mm-hmm. and then to a bunch of unknown. It is a ton of trust. I think for me, you really touched on this right away in your overall view. This big idea of what is your purpose? I feel like there is that emotional argument between Crosshair and Hunter about, did Hunter betray Crosshair by not coming back for him in any way? But then the heart of their discussion is, I think, really, to me, like, the heart of the show, of, you were clones that fought for the Republic. In this war, you had purpose. Then that changed. They got the advice early on from Cutler Quain of, like, you got to become something different. And they've had a bunch of different nouns attached to them, and kind of rejected them or kind of embraced them. Of, like, well, you're kind of working with the Proto Rebellion again and again. Yeah. You're kind of being arms runners. Well, that's not what we are. You're kind of being mercenaries. Well, that's not what we are. And the only thing that Hunters has been able to cling to is sort of, well, we're here for each other. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this whole idea of what is your purpose was so animating throughout the episode and in their argument. I feel like there's a lot of plot stuff and history stuff that's of interest in the Kamino tour mm-hmm. that Omega takes them on. But it also feels to me emotionally like it's really getting to, like, you know, Kamino is a tour of who they used to be. Like, yeah. this whole place is a symbol of what they were made for, right? The yeah. labs and the training room and just even saying experimental unit 99 began right here. It's really that reminder of, this whole place is a reminder of, you used to have purpose and now you don't really, you know? And, yeah. you know, having that sense of the Bad Batch is coming home and it's not familiar. Literally, they don't know about that landing pad, that tube system, that lab, and the whole thing. It gives them this great existential sense of existential dread, which is literally like, where did I come from? What is the point of me? You know, even down to Echo saying, you know, Kaminoans kept a lot of secrets. So even with the non-Hunter and Crosshair part of the Bad Batch, they're really into this space of investigating, like, where did we come from? What is our purpose?
Yeah, it was pretty prevalent all the way through, of just Omega saying it pretty plainly. This is where you were created. You know, this is and this idea you touched upon it up top of, you can't go home again. And, you know, sometimes maybe you end up moving home. This is not the case. This is walking around those same streets, the high school dream that you talked about, that isn't quite the same. And you just know this isn't where you're supposed to be. And I think you use this backdrop of this burgeoning empire and destruction and the Star Destroyers and the battle. And there's all these other Star Wars things going on. But at the end of the day, this is about moving forward. For me, that big question, the Jedi are more prepared to do than the Sith. And that really worked for me, too, on just a growing up level. It's Star Wars, and it should be about that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And it did make it feel like this can be looked at as a coming-of-age story where the battle-hardened clones teach this young kid how to, you know, be a person in the galaxy, the real coming-of-age. But it's totally a coming-of-age story for all of them, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I also had those moments there when they're in that lab where I'm like, I mean, they're all like 3 years old, right? How does that math work? No, yeah, it's where I was created and this is where you were. I mean, and it wasn't like that was a real somber scene, right? I wouldn't expect it to be a party, but like when they walked in, there was maybe a maturity in Omega's voice that's not always there. It was a very strong but somber sounding voice from Omega, just telling the truth, going back to the beginning and kind of saying, I know I was here. Almost as if she watched it, you know, and changed the roles. That was almost the point where the role changed too, but also the big picture of who they are now, where they want to be.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of sadness in, you were here before you went off to be with the other clones. Paraphrasing there because I didn't write that one down. But that real sense that, like, Omega has always wanted to be a part of, if not this squad, a squad, and she saw people come and go and leave, you know?
Yeah.
Which reinforced her desire to have them all stay together. But in terms of, you know, big question of what's your purpose, like, that's then... Literally, I feel like it's kind of subliminally there, subtextually there with what's going on with them in the lab and in the tour of Kamino. But then between Crosshair and Hunter, it's explicitly the argument, right?
Yeah.
Crosshair believes they are meant to be soldiers with power. You know, he says a bunch of different things to Hunter of, you betrayed everything we stood for. Stop pretending to be something you're not, Hunter, which I would interpret as like a father figure.
Yeah.
And then Crosshair, I think, I really like it when he says, we're superior. The Empire can't protect the galaxy without strength. This is what we were made for. He says to them, to the whole Bad Batch, you all are meant for more than drifting through the galaxy. Join the Empire and you will have purpose again. It is this great desire just explicitly to be for something, to have a purpose. And it feels like Crosshair is kind of grasping at straws to say, well, the Empire needs strength, so yeah, no, we can be that strength, and that'll be great. And then, like, almost on this comic level again, like Crosshair almost making the argument of people who, the fans who sometimes think Bad Batch is too slow.
Yeah,
you should be on a mission every episode, clear, focused mission. That is your purpose, not wandering through the galaxy with rancors,
not asking emotional questions and hanging out with cameos of the week.
Exactly. So Crosshair makes that a big argument. And then Hunter, I think, says less, but it's still very clear. I feel like Hunter is just kind of at this point reinforcing with a lot of conviction what he said before, particularly in debates with Echo, that the squad right now is the purpose. You know, he says we're loyal to each other, not some empire. And when Crosshair is pushing them to join the Empire so they can all be together again, you know, he's got that great, you really don't get who we are, do you? As, you know, that pans across the whole group. And it feels like Hunter's not being super wordy or explicit about it, but his counter argument is we do have purpose. It's being here for one another.
Yeah, yeah, we are the purpose. And this whole season, we've often talked about Hunter making kind of the slow decision, right, to take some of these bigger stands and all those kind of things. But I think this one really worked for me because the dueling purposes is a great way to look at it, of Crosshair saying, this is who I am, kind of, saying, I took out my chip. This is the choice I made. And what you're saying, it was a real pretty clear declaration from Hunter about where they are right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did feel like that was the big final and not nail in the coffin of this theme, because it's a lovely theme. The final exciting bullet point in this theme of Crosshair revealing that his chip is removed. And just like you're saying, this is who I am. Really getting into that big Star Wars idea of choice of, like, no, I have not been manipulated to think this. I truly believe that we are soldiers and our purpose is strength. And Crosshair kind of being like, I can't take it if I don't have a purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Yeah. That's a nice, that's a bad thought, but a nice thought of just like, I gotta wedge my purpose in somewhere and I'm going to justify it his way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like there's some classic, perhaps a dark side stuff going on with Crosshair that the chip is out and he didn't make this choice, but is this choice just being made out of pain and anger?
Exactly. That's powerful.
Yeah. So when do you want to talk about the chip? Do you want to talk about the chip now, about the when of it, because it's really set up as a mystery?
I think it ties into, it's more than a plot point answer, and you and I are excited by this kind of thing. It really worked for me on the chip's out, and the first thing I wanted to do was rewatch the season right at that moment. Not for when did he take it out, but when was he fully making these choices?
Yeah. Yeah. I think for me, what I took from it is I loved the ambiguity of it. And you can kind of run down like the plot opinions of when exactly did it happen and all that. But it just, so it works so well on such a thematic level, this is yeah. one thing that I kind of hope for that might happen, that it wouldn't just be a repeat of Wrecker of like, oh, this is scary, but we got him in the machine, we got the chip out, but that I kind of hope that it would be this emotional beat, which is so much more powerful. Like, nope, surprise, I made this choice. Yeah. So I was really happy with just like the emotional power of it. But then the fun mystery, the plot of him saying like, well, it doesn't matter when. And Hunter looking like truly frightened of like, when? Yeah. How long have you been making these decisions? And for me, I think there's that moment where Hunter looks at his big head wound scars, right?
Yes.
And I think that is, you know, already playing on all these great Star Wars themes of like, we did that to him. Like, I think Hunter probably knows that's from, you know, when we blew him up a little bit. Sorry, buddy. But for me, I kind of take it as we saw Crosshair in that machine getting, you know, cooked, basically getting the Kaminoan scientists doubling down on making sure he right. follows the orders. Right.
Yeah.
And we also have kind of the evidence of him repeating the mantra that the chip is clearly designed for, because we heard that with Wrecker as well, of good soldiers follow orders. So I feel like there's a lot of evidence in the first half of the season that is the chip. Maybe there's some natural inclination, but the chip is really saying, nope, 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 go, go, go. I kind of feel it is after Braca, after they were there helping Wrecker. I don't know if Crosshair knows that. I'd have to rewatch for that clarity. But they were there running around the galaxy helping other people. They didn't even try to help Crosshair. They blew him up. So if that explosion, if that damage destroyed the chip, or he discovered it and took it out, however, and then he kind of wakes up from that going, oh, I wasn't entirely making my own decisions. And instead of helping me, my brothers, my friends, my squad, my family just ripped into me, scarred me, and left me.
Yeah. That would be the point for me. That'd be the win.
Yeah.
Right? It makes total sense to what he's saying in this episode, which is why I love this stuff. I don't know what I guess I was just expecting a Hunter Crosshair fist fight. We got a little bit of that, but you know, it goes so much more, and it goes into what you're talking about here. And the idea that because even right here, right now, Hunter's saying it, right?
Yeah.
They're saying it. He's saying like, oh, this isn't you. It's your inhibitor chip. If I was Crosshair, I'd be like, oh, really? So then that's why you decided to blow me up and leave me for dead. I didn't have a choice. So I think you're right, Joseph. I think that's a very, you know, it would be an important point to do it. Maybe it's before, maybe it's after, who knows? Maybe it was 3 years ago because he found something and, you know, took it out and didn't tell anyone. I don't know. But I think that's a real, in terms of the themes, that makes sense for what he believes at this moment, what Crosshair believes. You know, I never had a chance. You left me for dead.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what I like about that is, hey, if the story is he took it out 3 years ago, I can make that work in my mind as well. And we'll see where the story goes, and we'll accept the story as it's told. But right now, when it's open for interpretation, there's such great, like, it really connects to, like, Kylo and Anakin in the Dark Side Falls that we've got to watch, where you can see the legitimate grievance, but the person doesn't deal with any of their own actions, right? So if Crosshair wakes up and realizes, oh, I had my control taken away from me, and instead of trying to help me, like they're running around the galaxy helping every other a-hole in the galaxy, they didn't help me. Well, then I'm going to make the choice to show them, you know, that they're wrong. I'm going to capture them. I'm going to force them to do things that they don't want to do. I'm, you know, and it is dealing with his pain just through lashing out in anger and vengeance.
Yeah.
Even though you can understand where he's coming from, he's not stopping and going, okay, but I understand where they're coming from. I made some bad choices. He's just using the pain that he encountered as justification to unleash pain on them.
Yeah, it's a lesson of hate, right? It's a lesson of Star Wars hate and living in that hate cycle. You know, if you happen to hate a Star Wars animated show, maybe just don't live in that hate. Maybe move on and process it in other ways. Yeah, no, I really think you're on something. And this is the core of the episode I think I really like, that maybe goes beyond even just generic themes. It's just not generic. I mean, these are powerful themes here. But, like, you know, just it really got me in that regard. and it speaks to mental health and therapy and any kind of real world thing you got to say here, you know, that now that I expected two episodes of Crosshair going to Imperial Therapist. But, you know, just a personal responsibility in that regard and how it can slip real easily. And this probably did start with fear, hate, suffering, all those kind of things. And you and I always say a lot, that's not just the Jedi. That's not right. Just Sith Jedi thing. The light side, dark side is present in every decision with Star Wars characters.
Exactly. Well said. So let's get into, since we've already slid into there anyway, how the themes of this episode reflect larger storytelling and perspective of Star Wars. What were your thoughts there?
There was none. No. I'll tell you where I went. I went to this idea, you touched on it too, of the Emperor selling the idea of superiority. Mm. And how that is the safe and secure society. Because, again, we're not too far from that moment of Palpatine screaming that to the galaxy. We're closer to that than we are away from it. And the idea that they can't protect the place without strength is a lie and a business line being sold around the galaxy. And Crosshair's part of that. So to me, looking at the bigger story of Star Wars, bigger perspective, I just fascinating because this show is dealing with that. And as Hunter and Crosshair were having those conversations, I was kind of doing that roll call of memories of this season, going to Pantora where some are cheering, go to other planets where they're going to try to fight, go to Ryloth where Cham's shrugging the shoulders and has no energy to go on at first, and how this is kind of the big picture in the Empire all the way through. Don't worry, we'll give you credits. We got your back. We're going to destroy you slowly. And if you stand against us, you're gone. Because we need to. We need everyone to have strength, and we're the strength. It popped for me in that regard.
Yeah, it's great. And I love that Hunter really says, like, look, we've been across the galaxy. They are, you know, controlling and taking over everywhere they go. Mm-hmm. And there's this really great contrast where you can see the tempting perspective from Crosshair of, like, we were made for strength to protect something from something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's who we are. And this idea of there is, it is about fear. It is about a phantom menace, in a way. Not, I don't mean that in a cute way. I mean, like, that's kind of the power of that name of, we keep hearing, Imperials talk about, well, we need strength to protect the galaxy. And there is that big hanging question of, like, well, from who or what? Because then we see in all these episodes, the Empire using that excuse of strength and security to attack their own citizens, literally.
Right.
And I think it's really powerful because it's this great big Star Wars theme of choice, and Crosshair is letting himself believe something that he probably could decipher isn't entirely true. There isn't some, there's some insurgencies here and there right now with Saw, but there isn't some huge threat, huge legitimate threat to the galaxy, right?
Yeah, no, and doesn't, I think Crosshair, let me scroll here, I think I wrote down, he says, don't become my enemy. And I was just like, oh, so the Sith aren't the only absoluters around here, huh? Okay. Yeah, and now they're just kind of, it all comes out of what's at play there.
Yeah, don't make the same mistake twice, you know, don't become my enemy. It's like, we were never your enemy, which is really getting to what we were talking about, of like, yeah, the Empire is trying to think that there is a threat where there isn't, you know?
Yeah.
The other big Star Wars theme for me is, you already touched on it, is just this big idea of accepting change. You can't go home again. This is a very dark version of it. You can't go home again because it's been systematically destroyed by the Empire. Yeah. But it still resonates in that philosophical way of, like, things change. That is kind of the nature of the galaxy, the nature of the Force. That is the way of things. So you have to find a way to accept forward movement, accept change.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, again, that's a lesson all through Star Wars. Everywhere you look at it, sometimes the folks have robes on and lightsabers. Other times it's citizens or a group of super soldiers.
Yep. Exactly. Any other big thoughts?
No, that was where I went with all that there. The idea, a lot of stuff we touched about, like the idea of Star Wars redemption and how you get there and how you analyze it and what is true redemption and choice and chances, we already kind of dealt, but it, you know, definitely reflects some of the bigger stuff in Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. Really, really powerful stuff around the idea of choice. When you get that great epiphany that you know, if you interpret the season and Crosshair's chip the way we are right now, which of course we could be wrong, but if you interpret it that way, the realization that Crosshair has been doing some awful things with his choice entirely removed, and then some awful things with his choice entirely restored. That's a fascinating look at the idea of choice in Star Wars.
Absolutely is.
All right. Well, let's take a quick break, and then we'll be back to discuss some of our favorite action moments, comedy moments, canon stuff, all that great stuff in just a moment.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, Force Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Force Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JenniLanda.com. That's JENILANDA.com for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138.
And we are back to continue our discussion of Return to Kamino, the penultimate episode of Season 1 of The Bad Batch. Let's get into moments of action, Ken. There was some good action in this one. Did you have some favorite moments?
So, yes, there was some great action in this, but this has happened a few times in the show for me, where, number one, I was really engaged by the themes this week. Like, I just was eating up everything going on there. And I had to watch this again. I was like, I didn't even focus. Like, did I watch any of the action? There was a lot. I'm going to focus on a couple here. The AZ knocking down ESO2 with that row of droids, and just him committing to the cause and like kind of celebrating. Like, if you can read his face, you can. It's happy, and I love that little moment.
Yeah, and I think he says something like, "I did it." Paraphrasing there, which is a real great companion line to that. Like, I was hiding, and we should all run away. No. You want to help other people when we could run away? And then that little moment of like, hey, I did it.
Yeah. Great use of action. Just a great use of action, man. A little writing stuff going on there, right? Just a little setup, a little payoff. It worked really well.
Yeah. Yeah. I liked that one a lot. I really liked the callback or reuse of Crosshair's reflector shot thing, which we've seen early on. That was a damn great bit of direction when Tech and Wrecker look over and see themselves reflected in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just cool Star Wars action. That is Crosshair's one of his cool abilities and his cool bit of tech, and to just see all those elite squad troopers drop like flies.
Yeah. On the second view, but I did a rewind a couple times too. I actually was trying to trace where the laser bolts went. To what purpose? Like, they missed one. And yeah, it was great. But yeah, there's that final one. It's a blast in the chest, man. Oh man.
Yeah, no stunning for Crosshair.
No.
Nope. And then in that big, big explosion of action with all of the training droids, there's a lot of great stuff in there, but I particularly appreciated that little exchange with AZ and Omega saying, you know, you released more droids than you meant to. And she's like, yeah. But then that great Deadeye shot with her crossbow right through the mechanical heart of that training droid is like, nice, Omega.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite moments, too. Just so sleek, smooth. I loved it. Yeah, and a little good, fun comedy banter, too.
Yeah, exactly. So some other moments in that sequence for you?
I just overall love the concept of here we're talking about going home again, and you can't go home again, and going back to the beginning to find out who you are, and going right to that training center, which you've seen in Clone Wars before, but going back to the early Bad Batch episodes. I just liked the use of that. It was a good use of a place to set all the action. Just made a lot of sense. So that worked very well for me. Just some good blaster fire. Good old pew, pew, pew through that episode fighting those droids.
Yeah, a lot of good pew, pew, pew. I like the one shot where Wrecker is tossing the one droid into another, which I always like, but that was just a particularly dynamic shot where the sort of camera is arcing up and then down with the droid. You barely even see Wrecker throw him, but you just kind of, you can if you go back, because I did. But yeah. It also just like you see a droid flying, you're like, who did that? Wrecker. We know.
Wrecker.
We don't know. We know. We don't really need to see it. But I think my favorite moment is one that you're referencing there of when it becomes apparent that, you know, they're overwhelmed by the training droids and Crosshair starts shooting with them and they all kind of stand up and come together. And it's this real great bittersweet moment of this reflection back to the moment where they did all have purpose. They were all working together. It was all clear. It was all simple. But this nice moment of, hey, maybe Crosshair will come around and we're all together in this moment. And it had this really triumphant version of the kind of what I think of as the sort of primary Bad Batch theme, which can play sometimes in a sad way, sometimes in an ambiguous way. And it was nice to hear it just sort of triumphant as they stand and fight together.
It is a great moment. And you know, we throw these episodes up on YouTube, so I'll grab a screenshot, make a little thumbnail out of it. Right. And I grabbed this shot initially and, if you're listening on YouTube right now, that's not the thumbnail. Cause I was like, well, that is a spoiler. Let's not use that. But it was so cool. It's a great shot. Just seeing them all together again. It really was cool. I'm glad you highlighted that.
Yeah. Together again for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And then we'll see. So moving on, did you have some favorite moments of comedy, whimsy, or weirdness?
Some great tech retorts here, right? All through this episode. And always with tech, because it's such great comedy of character. It doesn't stand out as a joke necessarily, especially if you write it down, but just Echo saying, Kevin Owens keep a lot of secrets, and Tech going, indeed. Just the conviction behind that.
Yeah, that was really good. A lot of, I think, Tech's comedy and his character, which are one and the same often, comes from this question of how much information does he have? Because you get the sense like Tech just, he wants to know everything. He wants it to be written down and he wants it to be accurate. And he wants it to be searchable on his data pad, on his personal Tech Wikipedia. And a lot of his great lines in this are centered around that. The indeed was like, yes, no, it's very frustrating that I can't complete the Camino and Wikipedia entry.
Yeah.
But I love two great moments of comedy that I'm sure you have written down as well, as when Omega is kind of learning them about some of the truths of that lab, and Wreckers first got the, what? Bah, bah, is that true? Which is funny all by itself. Yeah. And then Tech saying, how could I possibly know that?
It was a great line. Absolutely wrote that down. It was a great line. It was just such, he was helpless. We're talking about, you know, you're in a familiar place. It's no longer yours. I mean, everything about it, he seems so lost and bitter and angry about that.
Yeah. And Omega basically, sharing like what I think for like us as humans would be like, you know, prenatal or just born memories of like, yeah, I don't remember that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was the joke to me almost was like, I can't Google my own memories, you know, unless there's some reason for it to be on the historical record of the internet. You know, I don't remember what exact day I saw Wrath of Khan, you know.
Yeah.
I can't Google that. I also liked Wreckers. Well, guess you were wrong about that. When Tech comes up with the plan that you pretty much know is going to be wrong, right?
Yeah, I wrote that down too. Yeah, we're in sync today on those beats. It was just, I love a good Wrecker. Good Wrecker line is very great. So yeah, no, I love that one.
A lot of good Wrecker lines. Any more for you?
We talked about the banter between AZ and Omega in the middle of all that action. Just kind of fun. Very, very, very human android interaction, I guess I should say. Clone android interaction. I loved it.
Yeah. This is a great one. Earlier in the episode, I liked the quick bit of dialogue where Wrecker says, I left Gregor with Sid. She wasn't too happy about it. And Echo says, what else is new?
I love that you brought that up, because I have now finally remembered to turn on the closed captions subtitles there. And so I had forgot. And I went, wait a minute, what did he say Gregor? And it reminded me to put on the subtitles. That was a real funny line, because it just had there's an alternate episode that's like a sitcom of just Gregor annoying the crap out of Sid.
Exactly. I thought the exact same thing of like, if it was a different tone to the episode, I would have loved to just cut back to Gregor cackling and Sid just glaring at him.
Yeah. All right, Cackles, what are you doing?
Cackles.
Yeah.
I think that is a solid prediction. I think we're going to hear Sid called Gregor Cackles. Final one for me, it was a dark moment of whimsy, but it literally made me laugh, is when Crosshair, I think it's when he's telling them to throw down their weapons, and they do, and Crosshair says, see, following orders isn't so difficult. It's such a great callback to such an ominous line from both Crosshair and Wrecker of good soldiers follow orders.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
And, you know, just really a great summation of what has been different about the Bad Batch, that they don't follow orders. That's it for me, though. I thought this episode was much more focused on the melancholy contrasted with the hope of trying to save one another, that there wasn't as much room for super fun whimsy.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Well, let's then get into some of the canon and lore connections. A lot of this was sort of like not just referencing something, but really big changes in the state of things. Some stuff that I think people have been waiting for and wondering about for a long time. We get that the Empire is no longer using clones. We have little drips here and there in canon that things didn't go great for Kamino or the Kaminoans. But now we got it in all of its just absolute glorious horror of the destruction of Topoka City. So I wanted to talk about that in particular. It's a big moment of canon. I feel like it is rare to actually hear the name Topoka City. So I was just happy to hear that on screen.
It is. Because I was even laughing at myself thinking, ah, Camino's going to go. And it's like, well, yeah, this probably... Chicago, the Chicago version of, Camino there, because I think Topoka City is like New York to me. So some second city is like, oh, we're here. Don't worry about us. We're still here. I love the use of it, even though, you know, it's just fair to say, hey, Camino's gone. But it hit for me to hear that name.
Yeah, yeah. And then for me, I think there's all this great stuff where immediate transitions are happening with the Empire, certainly in the choices and the procedure. But seeing we've got this proto stormtrooper armor, the TK armor. Mm-hmm. But then we keep having these moments, too, where different ships that used to be the hero's ships, you know, the Republic gunship, yeah, and now the Venators, and even clarifying that that's, you know, tech being very specific says Venators, you know.
Yeah.
To know that it is the Venators that fleet that used to be there defending Camino, that we've seen that in the Clone Wars, that's the Venators delivering the death blows, was powerful to me.
Yeah, good use. Yeah, you're right. A few times we've talked about that throughout the season. It kind of hurts you seeing them. Don't do that, Yularen. Yeah. What do you think, Yularen?
maybe we'll see Yularen. I can't wait for that cameo. and then I think a lot of people were probably affected by this. I already saw some tweets highlighting and celebrating it, but I wanted to ask you about it. Before the barrage of laser death came for Topoka City, those shots of meaningful but empty spaces, true classic montage in the sort of a film theory sense of montage of different shots combined together to make one meaning. How did you feel about that? Did it affect you?
It was one of my favorite parts of this episode. I could almost hear Madonna singing "This Used to Be Our Playground." Like, it really started to pull on the heartstrings. You said yank, and I think that's fair to say. And it just was a good, simple use of not just only for them, for the Bad Batch, but also for clones, but also for us as prequel fans and those who may have grown up with the films and Attack the Clones and Camino and that crazy wild world where Obi-Wan fought Jango. Like, this is big. This is a big canon answer, and it's just kind of a big thing for Star Wars fans. And if you felt something out there listening, you're not alone. It was just a real effective use of this collection of shots you're talking about.
Yeah, no, it was incredibly powerful, I think, both from the perspective of the Bad Batch, their relationship to the place. This is their home that can't be their home anymore. But also exactly what you're saying, like, it really taking the time to say, like, fans, this is it. The moment you've waited for. Are you sure you wanted it? Here we go. It really, really touching into those, the ways that you know, something like Star Wars is different because we build our personal relationship to it, you know, depending on how many times you've watched Attack the Clones. Is it one of your favorites? Did it get you through hard times watching those scenes again and again? Like for lots of video games, but in particular, you know, Battlefront 2, like how many hours have you spent defending, yeah, you know, some of those spaces from separatist assault? If you have a strong relationship to some of the Clone Wars episodes that are desperate defense of that space, to now see it hollow, empty, and about to die is really powerful.
Absolutely. When they start taking out the support pillars under that great underwater shot, and it just, they took their time with it away. It wasn't just a blast from a distance. You really felt it.
Yeah. And I think I just really liked seeing a shot that felt not new in terms of just, you know, filmmaking or screen narrative, but felt a little different for Star Wars. Like the emotions and the themes feel like this is very Star Wars, but just that very specific montage of empty spaces that forces you to think about what is the collective, meaning of these individual shots, particularly like this sense of place. And as soon as it started, I was like, oh, they're doing this. This is so great. There's a couple of sequences like this in other stories that I really love. There's a shot like this in Twin Peaks that is really it's a reminder that the whole town is very connected and something bad is about to happen. And we're flashing through all of these spaces. And it's just this reminder that it's kind of all connected. We're all responsible. It really reminds me of a shot near the end of the original film Halloween, which also has a little bit of that same connection of all of these spaces are separate, but they all build to this meaning of connection. And I loved that it was all the shots were places that had a sense of home, right? The Bad Batch's quarters, the mess hall, the cloning tubes. Like there was a part of me was like, come on, give me the spoon chair office. But then it was like, no, because all of these images are, yes, this is a massive facility for producing soldiers, but it was also a home for individuals. And those shots made you feel that it was a home for individuals and it's a birthplace for individuals, and it's gone now.
Gone. Yeah, you think of, 99, fives, any of them. It's really effective. Really effective. So kudos for making me sad.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a clone who hits the button to fire. I like that detail.
Yeah.
They hadn't rotated him out yet.
Yep.
Extra cool. Also, canon-wise, then, I wanted to talk about Nala Se's lab, we get some kind of canon information. There's a secret lab with a secret tunnel, secret landing platform. We get the information that this is where Omega was created, and she knows that. This is where Clone Force 99 was enhanced. That was some nice kind of clarity for me on their whole thing, that they were produced and that they had they were, quote-unquote defective, as the show calls them. But then those abilities were enhanced in this lab. It's cool. And then this kind of fascinating timeline thing with Omega, who is, aging at a normal rate, so appears younger, remembers seeing the rest of the clones before they left to be with other clones. How did you feel about Nala Se's lab? Obviously, we talked a little bit about, the emotion of it, but just kind of, the canon-wise, the plot-wise, is this a hint of something? Where did your mind go with all that?
I didn't necessarily take it of what's to come. Other there's another line with Rampart and Tarkin where he says the cloning technology is now firmly under Imperial control, which that can take your mind into many different spots, all the way up to Rise of Skywalker or any time before. But as far as the actual stuff, I just was intrigued by, again, the Kaminoans keep their secrets, have a lot of secrets, and what else might they have tried in here? What could have been? What was the original purpose before for enhancing Clone Force 99? I had more of those thoughts. We'll never know, and I guess it doesn't matter. but she's alive. Nala Se is alive, and what other things does she know and what she's capable of, and why was it so secret? Why did Lama Su and everyone, did they know about it even, too? I gotta imagine. And they're aware of her experiment. So, I don't know. It just made me kind of reflective on what she was doing and what could have happened versus 5 years from now, do we have Imperials doing the same type of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think the stuff that you're pointing out with the clarification that Nala Se is, of course, alive and the Empire has the control of the cloning stuff, that goes into the long Snoke Palpatine discussion that we're getting bits and pieces everywhere, right? Feels like with firming up that story. But I felt like for Omega in the Bad Batch, there keeps being this feeling to me that there is just a little bit more to Omega's creation that we don't fully understand of she is unaltered from Django, but she obviously has these skill sets that seem to kind of echo the rest of the Bad Batch. Exactly how is her creation the same or different from Boba Fett's feels to be like a dangling thing. Yeah. I feel like at the beginning of the whole season as well, there is such an emphasis on we need them back so we can try to get this superior clone product out that will keep the Empire from canceling our contracts. And obviously that as a hope for Lama Su and the Kaminoans did not work out.
Right.
But I feel like this is one of those things where announcing season two is helpful because it feels like there's still enough kind of questions of what is the exact truth of Omega? What are the possibilities of what Nala Se could still try to create that could be a story going forward if Nala Se is being forced by the Empire to come up with some options, and it does tie back to Omega, that thread of Omega and the rest of the Bad Batch are still wanted now by Nala Se under the pressure of the Empire, and that thread could still continue and could even become an animating mission for Bad Batch. If they feel like Nala Se is creating more of us, do we want to help? Do we want to stop that? It seems like that storyline could still continue under the control of the Empire. And it felt a little bit like that's maybe why some of this was being highlighted.
I got you on that. That sounds kind of intriguing, number one, but sounds kind of right. Just that it's real. The real focus of I can use a scientist. I can't use a politician and building on that. And I made the joke earlier, but the Bad Batch was like 3 years old. I know there's many years prior to Obi-Wan pop into the cloning facility that they were around. So getting a little bit more on why there's perhaps an alpha and an omega is an answer I definitely want. I you know, you and I play around and talk about the themes a lot, of course, but I'm intrigued by a little bit of the clone mystery there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's been one of the delights of this, is just seeing some of these really concrete answers of the exact transition between the clones and the stormtroopers and how fast the Empire moves on what. All that stuff is great. Another canon moment is Tarkin saying his motto, Tarkin saying his T-shirt slogan, "You may fire when ready," right?
Yeah, it's his branding.
It's his branding. How did you feel about that? Was that too on the nose, or was that just like, yeah, no, that's his thing?
Nah, I mean, that's his thing, right? It's probably some standard protocol in that too as well. You know, he wants to be very clear. Fire when ready.
He's being a good manager. He is telling them to fire, but he's also empowering them to make the choice of when they are ready.
Yeah, it's, look, you know, say what you want about the Empire, but they do give you the choice to fire when you want. Fire at will, Commander. Fire when ready. It's there, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Except for poor Kylo, who just screams more.
Mar.
The TK troopers, obviously we heard that phrase last week. We heard it again this week. We obviously know it from TK421 back in the day. Every time I hear TK, though, it makes me really intrigued of when the term stormtrooper will be used and if that will be kind of a moment in the show.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, it's one of those things of like, we know it, we live with it. When do the characters of the actual story figure that out or start using those terms? That's a great question, great thought, because it seems like, they haven't even finalized the design yet, right? So maybe that's the next phase. Fix the helmets and come up with a good name.
Yes, maybe we will get the Palpatine branding session. Yeah. I would like that very much. Final thing for me in canon is, I don't know if this is something, a hint to be run down or not, but where have the other clones been sent? We saw them packing up and leaving. AZ this week said all clone troopers were reassigned and transferred off world. There is still some ambiguous dialogue last episode to me between Rampart and Crosshair about the mission and the plan. And if, I don't know if they were talking about getting the Bad Batch to Kamino and trying to turn them, which seems to be was Crosshair's plan of like, I can get them to work for you again, or if they're talking about some other mission with the clones. Do you take that this is that the clones have just been assigned to crappy jobs and they'll be phased out or, you know, thrown into a wall of fire, or do you think the remaining clones are being used for a specific purpose?
I guess what's even that line the Crosshair says about they're getting rid of the clones, not the useful ones or whatever you specifically.
Yeah, not the ones that matter.
Not the ones that matter. Thank you. So I think you could see a mix of, on one hand, my mind wants to say, as some of them are just sent to the spice mines of Kessel, or whatever the version of that is in the Empire, work on Wobani or something horrible. Because maybe there's a lack of trust, right? That's part of the big reason behind the TK program, right? Is get some people willing to fight for the Empire, making that choice. So I could see the clones being phased out in that regard. But we also they have skills, right? Clone commandos. We just saw that last week. So I could see some specialized units, some specialized missions, and maybe a mixture of both. And along the way, just get rid of who we don't want around.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm unclear. I think it could just be like, yeah, no, they've been sent a bunch of different places. But then there's that part of me, it's like, ooh, will there be a little story arc where like hundreds, thousands of remaining clones are all sent after Saw Gerrera at once.
Right. And it, yeah, a little bit of a, you know, cannon fodder kind of attitude from the Empire. Like, we don't care if we lose them. We kind of want them out anyways, but they got skills. Yeah, I think you could see some of that play out.
Yeah, yeah. Any other cannon moments or thoughts for you?
No, pretty much it. I mean, the Kamino stuff was so powerful. And you know, I would not believe this in 2002, but I'm like, man, I kind of want to watch Attack of the Clones this weekend.
Right. To see Kamino when it was all working so well.
Yeah. And definitely fire up Battlefront 2.
Absolutely. I want to go defend Kamino right now. Was there anything in this episode that you disliked or questioned?
No. I really didn't. I said, set up top. Like I'm so glad. And I knew they would just, the confrontation was something so much more, something so much meaningful, and just a big questions on that. And this episode, so I didn't question anything. I really loved it. If there's any questions of the season and it meanders or takes its time and filler and all those other complaints you can see out there, and I get it. Not everyone's going to love everything. I just think the show knew what it was doing, and it took its time, and it still is. We got one more episode, and then we'll build for season two. But so I know you asked if I questioned anything. I can confirm I do not.
No, I agree with you. I think the show has its joy of just like spending time with these characters that you like, but this episode made it extremely clear that they're very clear on what the big ideas are and how they attach, and they're telling the story at the pace that they want to tell the story, and then we as audiences get to decide as we are. Some people are like, I'm fine with that pace, and other people are clearly not. Yeah. And that is their choice. There's no Star Wars opinion chip in their brains. Everyone can make their own choice on that. I think for me, often with anything I disliked or questioned, it just comes down to I feel like Kylo Ren screaming more, because sometimes there's kind of the tip of the iceberg idea, and I'm not sure if it's going to get developed more in future episodes. But I think for me, there was I wanted a little more for a couple of specific things. I really like Hunter coming to some clarity or peace with, you know, like who they are, which seemed to me totally being implied of being a squad, that a family is purpose enough for him. But I really hope to see that idea developed even more. And I guess I don't really expect it in this episode, because there's still one more episode of this season to go, and still a lot of, I think, soul searching to be done in future seasons. But it'd be really interesting to me if he kind of got to the point of like, yeah, no, I don't either. We do need a purpose and we should join the rebellion, the proto rebellion that isn't even named yet, or I don't need a purpose. Just staying alive with my family is great. And I feel like he's still kind of vacillating between those two things.
Yeah. I know what you mean. And this is definitely was a little shorter episode, right? Next week.
Yeah.
Next week.
Yeah. So I think, that is not a criticism of this episode. This episode made me want that to happen even more eventually.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So let's talk about hopes for this next episode. We got one episode left. There was definitely a straight up cliffhanger in that our friends were in the city, and then the city collapsed and fell into a giant ocean, which seems like a problem for our friends. Do you have hopes for this next episode?
I hope that at least two of them survive. I think they'll get out of it. And I think this big real question of, you know, you and I talking at the top of the show of like what's going to wrap up and what's going to carry over. I didn't know where I'd be with Crosshair at the end of the season. Would he be dead? Would he lose some kind of confrontation? Would he stick with his choice? And now I say there is a path to redemption that I didn't necessarily know I wanted there before. I do like Crosshair as a character, so I'd be on board with it. And then maybe season two is dealing with, you know, does he, you know, is there any cost for his decisions and whatnot? And I don't know, those bigger kind of questions. But so I think we might get an answer in this episode.
Yeah. I'm really excited by both just the practical reality and then the thematic reality that they're going to be trapped in the rubble of their past.
Yes.
In that I think there's that possibility that some of this sort of dangling ideas and emotions presented in that lab scene and with the tunnels, like I feel like the tunnels are probably like the practical answer ultimately of
yes.
how they get out of this. But I feel like in terms of just like literally being down in the bowels of their past is going to make them wrestle even more with who they are, who they truly are, who they truly want to be. But then also maybe some actual just literal plot stuff. Like maybe there is a little bit of an element of the truth of, you know, how they were created and what their purpose was. And maybe even Omega has clarity on what that next program is going to be. That might get a little bit of like plot clarity as well as that emotional discovery of who they want to be.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, I thought that too. You know, the concentration on Topoka City proper there. But yeah, you just established that way far away is this path, this tunnel.
So. Yeah, because Omega literally says they're across the whole planet, right?
Yeah, yeah, right, yeah, absolutely.
So are we going to get to see a part of Kamino? Mm-hmm. Party City, not Topoka City, Party City. Yeah. It's all bars and drunk Kaminoans.
Love it.
Yeah, and then I'm really intrigued by what you're saying is if Crosshair made it out of this season alive, mm-hmm. we could possibly wrestle with, you know, something we haven't seen for light side Jedi who fell to the dark side of working through the quote unquote redemption of, you know, mm-hmm. how do I set this right? How do I, you know, come to peace with some of the choices I made? So I think that's a really exciting possibility for season two. Mm-hmm. But just the way I feel, it feels like Crosshair is the story of season one. It's my gut instinct.
Yeah, yeah. That I'm going to say now more than ever makes sense. But it just they did hit it so well with emotional stuff this week that makes sense to me.
Yeah, it feels like a little bit of like Crosshair is either fully, you know, rescued and is a part of the team. Like Crosshair makes a choice next episode in that either he leaves with the team, admitting he's wrong, or he's dead. Either from stubborn, not changing his path, or a sacrifice kind of story. I feel like there's going to be a little bit of a pin in a button on Crosshair's story.
Yeah, and I got to maybe a coin flip kind of prediction, but Crosshair not getting out alive and maybe doing something the old Star Wars thing, I guess, sacrificing yourself as a form of redemption. I don't necessarily need that specifically, but I don't necessarily think he's going to survive this, but I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued to see all the ways it goes. I feel like there's a good possibility he doesn't make it out.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think AZ might die, which I feel really guilty, but
yeah.
Do you think AZ makes it out and is a star of the Bad Batch season?
Yeah,
two?
I hope so. I really like AZ a lot. So, you know, as long as Gonky's safe, he's piloting the ship, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Got to get Gonky off. Gonky to the rescue.
Yeah, that's a cliffhanger right now.
Yeah, that's the big cliffhanger. Is Gonky okay?
Yeah.
Final prediction is they're going to fall down into the depths of Kamino. They're going to be trapped in those tubes. And then, of course, they'll be rescued by Hondo.
There's still time. I'm here to pick something up. I left it. Oh, you're here.
I'm so excited that there is going to be a season two because there are a lot of interesting characters to explore. And I know some people have the cameo criticism and everybody has a right to their opinion. I just don't feel that. Like, mm-hmm. I so want to see them off on a new adventure in season two and they need information. So Sid tells them to go see this person named Maz Kanata and they walk into Maz Kanata's castle and there's Hondo. Like,
yeah.
I know to some people that just sounds like, oh, you're just throwing all these cameos in. But to me, what's exciting about it is you have these pockets of kinds of worlds in Star Wars and these characters are all kind of connected and they would frequent this place. And that's the way Maz's castle was established. So like to me, it all makes sense and it's exciting and fun.
Yeah, I get the criticism to a certain point of view. I just think it's been used well here in the Bad Batch kind of. We follow the Bad Batch as they learn and grow and make big decisions. And we just kind of see what's going on in the galaxy at this time through their eyes. It's just working for me personally. I understand if it doesn't for everybody, but there's more names to interact with. And I think it would be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on?
I think I'll watch Attack of the Clones and report back on my new feelings there.
Last thing for me is there's that quick shot when they're in the tube where there's this school of what I'm calling batfish.
Yes.
That swim by. And like, that is so great. I love random nature scenes in Star Wars where some animals swim or fly or run by. And those batfish, I tried to look them up. I couldn't find it. Maybe I will find the actual name, but I like those weird batfish.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Kamino's always been just a real interesting, totally sci-fi world and different from a lot of other things in Star Wars, and even things like that stand out.
Yeah, absolutely. So love it. We always like to end with a fun question, which is, if you could have a figure or a toy of anything inspired from this episode, what do you want?
So I've go with me here. I want the Topoka City Tunnel marble playset. You just build ramps and tracks and everything, and you drop some cool little marbles, and the marbles can have little tiny, tiny micro versions of the Bad Batch in there, and Omega, and throw an AV there. It doesn't matter. Put them all in there, and you can just race around the track.
That is smart. That is reasonable. I wrote down a whole expensive HasLab project Topoka City full playset for 3¾ action figures.
You know, I'll support that.
So you could act out the lives that they lost. You could have them go to the mess hall and eat and go in the training room. Oh, wouldn't it be beautiful? As we're wrapping up towards the end of the Bad Batch, the figure that I really, really want is I really hope that they do just make some nice 3¾ vintage Bad Batch. And the one I want more than anything is Tech, because he yeah. still is my favorite. But then it amused me if sometimes they don't do this as much with the vintage figures, but I like it when they have the different heads that you can pop on.
Yeah.
So it'd be great if they have a Tech action figure with a normal face and shocked face. And shocked face is barely any different at all.
This is my shocked face.
This is my shocked face, but you can pop the head off and swap it. He's mildly shocked. His data was slightly incorrect. Well, that is it for our big look at the finale part one, or Return to Kamino. Ken, do you want to let people know where they can find us?
Absolutely. We are the Force Center Podcast feed. We're on Twitter at Force Center Pod. You can find us on Instagram and YouTube as well. We are on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. Like us there. You can get an audiobook on us by going to audibletrial.com/Force Center. And don't forget, you can get merch at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. And we are available in a lot of different podcast spots, including Spotify, Amazon Music, TuneIn, Stitcher, and more. Just search and find us if you want to listen on a specific podcast location. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. You can support me by going to my website, kennapsack.com, or just follow me at kennapsack. And Joseph, where can they do the same for you?
Yeah, you can follow me on social media. Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw. And if you want to check out any of my other comedy adventures, my other podcast, Obsessed, future live shows, TV shows are written for, that kind of stuff is all on my website at josephscrimshaw.com. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for Crosshair's Inhibitor Chip, this has been the Bad Batch Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.